From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. Shrimp is America's second favorite seafood, but less and less of it is coming from the sea. About half of the shrimp sold in the United States is now grown in artificial ponds. Most of these shrimp ponds can be found along the coastlines of tropical nations. The world's appetite for shrimp is increasing. Last year, the world shrimp farms produced $6 billion worth of the product. But in many tropical countries, shrimp farmers have ravaged coastal forests and ruined old-fashioned fishing towns. These problems seem especially pronounced in Ecuador, which is one of the world's biggest producers of farmed shrimp. NPR's John Nielsen recently traveled to Ecuador, gathering material for a series on globalization. This is the first report in the series. It begins inside a packing plant in southern Ecuador.
If you are over 30 and you live in a part of the world that is not wet and hot all year, you probably remember when shrimp was either very expensive or came packed inside a can. That's not true anymore. You can get fresh shrimp almost anywhere these days, and it's relatively cheap. One of the reasons why can be found here in the Pro Marisco shrimp processing facility near Guayaquil, Ecuador, where 100 women in pink caps and face masks are sorting and deveining and taking the heads off and otherwise preparing millions of pounds of shrimp for export every year.
Aquí se procesan unas 150,000 libras diarias de camarón.
Rogelio Jara, the manager here, says 150,000 pounds of processed shrimp leave this building every day. Most of it goes to the United States, which is the world's biggest consumer of shrimp. Most of it comes from great big shrimp ponds carved out of the tidal mangrove forests that used to blanket Ecuador's Pacific coastline. It's hard to get around inside a mangrove swamp. The orange muck might as well be waist-deep glue, and the trees look like they've been pulled halfway out of the ground. Roots and branches are all tangled together into a dense thicket. Amazingly, there are people who thrive out here, like Mari Baraya and Paraceri Torre, who live in the nearby fishing town of Muisne. They glide across the muck towards the roots that shelter crabs and shellfish.
Yeah, we stick our hand in the mud all the way down to where we find the shellfish. And if we don't, we just keep moving on.
To get here, every day, they pass armed guards and dogs that protect local shrimp farms. When the farms were few and far between, the fisherwomen could pull up several hundred shellfish in a morning. But in recent years, the shrimp farmers have cut down roughly three-quarters of the forest in this area, replacing it with ponds that are often abandoned after two or three harvests. The fisherwomen now say they're lucky to find $3 worth of clam.
This isn't for profit, it's for survival. With this, we can buy basic medicines for our children, but it's just the bare necessities. This is not for profit.
Ecologists say mangrove forests shelter a spectacular variety of fish and birds. They also clean the polluted water produced by homes and factories and shrimp farms. When mangrove forests are destroyed, a downward environmental spiral sometimes starts, and the first casualties, typically, are the shellfish gatherers. She says she'll look for work as a maid if this job dies. 2 years ago, a group of activists from Muisne wrecked an unguarded shrimp farm in the area. The attack was organized partly by Greenpeace International, but mostly by a local environmental group called Fundacol. Fundacol's director, Leader Gongora, lives in Muisne, which sounds like it's a town that's still half swamp. Gongora says he's been fighting local shrimp wars for years. He says he's seen a lot of violence.
Sí, la industria era muy agresiva aquí. Eran como los pistoleros del oeste.
Yes, in the beginning, the industry was very hostile. They were almost like the the cowboys of the Wild West, everybody had a handgun. Because of that, it was that we were very much afraid, and the local people as well were very much afraid of standing up to the shrimp farmers, because they did carry weapons, and many of us have been beaten up, unjustly jailed, treated unfairly by the justice, and it's just been very hard to stand up to the shrimp farmers.
Gongora has talked with mangrove activists in other countries where shrimp farming has grown explosively in recent years. Places like Thailand, India, Indonesia, the Philippines, Malaysia, Bangladesh, Honduras, and Vietnam. He says they all agree that shrimp farming is the perfect example of globalization run amok, an export business that gives nothing back to local residents.
Nosotros decimos que después de la cocaína está el camarón.
Here in Ecuador, we say that right after cocaine, shrimp farming is the biggest profit industry there is, because after your first production, you have a return, a complete return on your initial investment. The following productions are just profit, and none of that profit is invested in the local communities. In these communities where the shrimp farms are built, there are no schools, there are no hospitals, there are no roads, there are no benefits to the local communities. Our question always is, where is that money? Where is the money that is being produced here in Ecuador?
Gongora wonders whether rich Americans ever ask themselves where the shrimp they're eating comes from. He wants them to know that in Ecuador, the American demand for shrimp is fueling a kind of land war. Ecuador's leaders agree that the growth of shrimp farms has caused problems in the coastal mangroves. But Yolanda Cacabazzi, a former environment minister, says nobody saw these problems coming.
Ecuador very aggressively went into shrimp farming. In a time where we didn't have in Ecuador any sort of regulations or any sort of knowledge or awareness of what mangroves were about, what was the relevance of that ecosystem. It's not that we didn't care about it, but we just didn't know about it.
Cacabazzi now directs a foundation that promotes sustainable development. She thinks Ecuador shrimp farms should be improved, but not abandoned.
I don't think we have to rule out the option of shrimp industry. I think it is a good option, if well managed. And I believe that you could live happily ever after by combining the two things, a good shrimp industry that supports the economy of Ecuador, plus very clear rules of the game on conservation.
Cacabazzi helped write some of those clear rules. One of the clearest temporarily bans construction of new shrimp farms. She says the problem at this point is one of enforcement.
The judicial system in Ecuador is very weak, corrupt. And each one of the judges in the coast has a pile of cases related to mangrove destruction. And they just put it aside because it has no interest to them in winning a case. Nature is not a value yet for that bureaucracy of the judicial system.
Cacabazzi says there is a group of Ecuadorian shrimp farmers who care about the future of the mangrove forests. Their unofficial leader is a nationally prominent businessman named Joaquin Orantia, who flew us out to see his farms in southern Ecuador.
But where most of the shrimp farms were built here in this province. This province, Guayas, has the largest mangrove area and also the largest shrimp area. Here, you could see very easy, you know.
The forest below this plain looks like a bumpy green carpet, except that it's riddled with geometrically shaped holes. Those are the shrimp farms. Arantia says many of them are illegal. Back on the ground, in the middle of Arantia's 7,000-acre farm, there's a greenish pond the size of a small reservoir. Water is draining out of a pipe, and shrimp scooped out of the pond are clicking and squirming at our feet. Orantia says this pond was built in a salt flat and not in a mangrove forest. He says there are no antibiotics in it. Proof to him that you can farm shrimp and keep the environmental damage to a minimum. He says the activists don't believe him. A lot of them would just as soon wreck every shrimp farm in the country. Given the disastrous state of the Ecuadorian economy, Arantia says it's hard to think of a stupider plan.
Absolutely. What saved this country was this industry, because about 10% of the population live on this industry. The people that sell parts for the engines, the people that sell nets, the engineers. It's a huge industry around this industry.
And don't get him started on the ban on construction of all new shrimp farms. In Arantia's view, all that does is punish responsible businessmen for the actions of a few crooks.
What happens if a taxi driver in New York goes over one person, run over them? I'm going to ask the mayor of the city, Mr. Giuliani, to take the driver license from all taxi drivers. No. Go and put him in jail, the one that runs over him. What they have to do is to obey the law. If they cannot follow the law, they shouldn't let them get into the business. And that's it.
Arantia adds that recently the fight over shrimp farming in Ecuador took a huge biological twist. A devastating virus called white spot started wiping out harvests up and down the coast. Shrimp experts say white spot is actually an Asian virus that's been globalized by the booming international trade in shrimp pond larvae. Arantia thinks the government should respond to this crisis by giving financial aid to the owners of legal shrimp farms. But government aid to shrimp farmers wouldn't go over well in Uisne, where a globalized economic trend is now strangling a fishing culture built around the seaside mangrove. For now, the people of Uisne are clinging to that culture. On Saturday nights, groups of school children sometimes gather on the beach to dance and sing folk songs. They celebrate the traditional fishing life and what's left of the mangroves that sustain it. John Nielsen, NPR News, Uisne, Ecuador.